and a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget, you can take the show with you 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for the Nick Craig Show, and if you are so gracious to do so, leave a review or rating in your favorite podcast app, or if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, click the like button and make sure you're subscribed and following the channel. We start this morning with a couple of local updates across southeastern North Carolina. First, to a scary situation unfolding on the New Hanover-Pender County line Tuesday night. Monday night, as a helicopter, a Novant Airlink helicopter, crashed. A spokesperson with Novant Health confirmed yesterday afternoon that the flight crew aboard the Apollo Metaflight was a pilot, a critical care registered nurse, and a critical care paramedic. The helicopter left New Hanover Regional Medical Center around 7:40 p.m. Monday night to return to its base at the Albert J. Ellis Airport in Onslow County. That's when it crashed. The spokesperson for Novant said, quote, "We are pleased to share that all individuals involved are currently in fair condition. Our primary concern remains the well-being of our team members, patients, and their families. We will continue to provide updates as more information becomes available." The spokesperson says that Novant Health and Apollo Metaflight, which operates the helicopter, are cooperating with the National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, as well as the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA. NTSB is currently investigating the crash and will be looking into the pilot, the aircraft, and the operating environment as part of their usual process. We expect a preliminary report within about 30 days and obviously a longer report, 6 to 12 months for a longer report from the NTSB alongside the FAA. So we'll keep an eye on that. That's the latest. Fortunately, everybody will survive on that helicopter crash on the New Hanover-Pender County line that happened earlier in the week. We've also got an update this morning on what was a shooting and a killing near one of these homeless camps that exists throughout southeastern North Carolina. The very prominent one is off of Kerr Avenue in Wilmington, and we are learning details this morning from the New Hanover County Sheriff's Office and the Wilmington Police Department that this shooting apparently happened in self-defense. This is this shooting happened 2 weeks ago, and WPD officers have determined that 36-year-old James Timothy Scott was the initial aggressor between him and an unidentified woman. The 36-year-old James Timothy Scott was in fact killed. The WPD press release out yesterday reads as follows, quote, "The woman who shot him was in fear for her life after he pulled out a knife and came towards her and threatened to kill her. Officers located a firearm, a knife, shell casings, and a cell phone at the scene, and they reported that no charges have been filed at this time. The incident does remain under investigation." The 36-year-old male was confirmed dead after the Wilmington Police Department responded in the woods off of Kerr Avenue February the 13th around 11 a.m. And regardless of, and WPD says this was self-defense, so it was self-defense in the eyes of the law. But irregardless of self-defense or not, this is an ongoing issue. These homeless encampments, which for whatever reason the left seems to believe and think that there's some huge amount of compassion that exists with these camps, that somehow it is a prosperous and thriving environment for people to live. It's not. It's an incredibly dangerous scene. And this is, we just know this from the things that have been publicly reported. I have spoken privately to law enforcement across our community, and they talk about some of the things that happen in these camps that don't get reported. The rampant drug use, sexual assault and rapes that are consistent in these homeless encampments across our area. Very infrequently do you have things that rise to the level of police getting called, and it's when somebody is stabbed, shot, or in this case, killed. There's no compassion in allowing these homeless encampments to continue to exist. Now, on the same vein, and we talked about this back on February 14th, I guess, when this story broke, You can't force individuals to change their life. We live in a free society, at least for right now, a free society, a free country. Individuals are allowed to live this kind of life. However, there are multiple legal violations that are taking place in these encampments day in and day out. And the easiest one, the simplest one right off the bat, is trespassing. This is not public land. This land is not just available for anybody to come and set up shop on. It's trespassing at the most minor of offenses. Then you go into the rampant drug use, where you have nonprofits throughout our community delivering clean needles to individuals so they can shoot up heroin without transmitting diseases. Is that compassion? Is that creating a prosperous environment for these individuals? You're giving them clean needles to shoot up? I can't wrap my head around that. And unfortunately, there is no good solution. Because you can't compel individuals to check themselves into a rehab facility if they're dealing with drug use, if they're addicted to whatever the drug might be. You can't force them to do that. Throwing them in jail is a drain on the system. It comes with incredible taxpayer expense. There is no good solution. But I can tell you this, the solution we have right now, which is allowing these homeless camps on private property to continue to exist, is not sustainable. You have somebody that was shot and killed there 2 weeks ago. You have the residents of New Hanover County that are picking up the tab every few months when crews go in and clean up the hundreds of pounds of garbage and trash. You and I are paying for that. It's not a sustainable situation. We have nonprofits. We have groups throughout our community that want to provide help and service. But again, you can't compel these individuals to take advantage of it. You can't force these individuals to go and take these services. So I'll have the link to this over in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's where you can subscribe and get the daily show notes and more, including our monthly hangout, which will be taking place tomorrow night for individuals that want to partake. We jump on a Zoom call, chat about some of the news, the politics of the day for a little over an hour or so. That'll be taking place tomorrow night for Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/Nick Craig. Look forward to chatting and talking with everybody tomorrow night. Up to Washington, D.C. this morning as budget conversations do continue. Yesterday, it was the House adopting its GOP budget resolution after leadership briefly pulled it from the floor Tuesday night, which has led for a dramatic win for House Speaker Mike Johnson after hardline conservatives seemed to sink the vote. The final vote total, 217 to 215, as Republicans have an incredibly narrow margin in the House of Representatives. Republican Thomas Massie of Kentucky joined all Democrats in voting no on the measure, allowing the resolution to survive. That bill will now head its way to the U.S. Senate, where intense negotiations will begin as the upper chamber has already adopted part one of its two-part reconciliation plan. An earlier vote was left open for over an hour as leadership attempted to sway holdouts. They included Representatives Victoria Sparks out of Indiana, Warren Davidson out of Ohio, and Tim Burchin out of Tennessee on the measure. Those three Republicans eventually changed their vote to yes, allowing the math to work in Johnson's favor. Democrats had repeatedly called for the House to come to order and vote on the resolution, with multiple members yelling, "Do you have the votes or not?" GOP leadership briefly pulled the resolution from consideration, allowing a different measure to be voted upon, and members from both parties left the chambers However, within about 20 minutes, the vote was back on. And with that, you had some major pressure coming in, including phone calls from President Donald Trump to some of the members that were not in favor of this resolution, muscling them into voting in favor. Democrats stressed attendance in a call with members last week, hoping to keep the margins as slim as possible. Representative Brittany Peterson, a Democrat from Colorado, arrived in the House just moments before the vote, keeping the two-vote margin of error in place. She was on maternity leave after giving birth to her son last month. Representative Kevin Mullen from California, also a Democrat who recently had knee surgery, also arrived last minute to cast a no vote on the resolution, bringing Johnson's margin to a single vote. The sole Democrat absentee was a representative from Arizona who is currently dealing with some serious medical issues surrounding cancer. That's Representative Raul Gravalla, who was not in session due to a recent diagnosis with cancer. I believe some chemo treatments going on there. With that, the budget delay would have been a severe setback for House Republicans, who are determined to pass one bill under reconciliation. That's a move that President Donald Trump himself endorses, despite Senate Republicans arguing that a two-bill approach would allow the GOP to get border and defense wins on the board faster. The budget resolution battle presented Johnson with his latest stress test: let the measure get to the floor and potentially fail or pull it from consideration. The speaker had faced immense pressure from some on his right flank, which is typical for contentious bills, but also centrists who typically back leadership on spending and government issues. The House budget resolution is a blueprint to unlock future spending legislation that would enact Trump's border, energy, and tax cut agenda. The framework calls for $4.5 trillion in tax cuts and up to $2 trillion in spending cuts, as well as $4 trillion in a debt ceiling increase. Now, that right there is why you had individuals like Thomas Massey not being in favor of it. Once again, you're dealing with a debt ceiling increase. And you know, here's the reality of what we're seeing right now. We have a federal government that is almost completely incapable of managing finances. Year after year, budget cycle after budget cycle, reconciliation bill after reconciliation bill, it goes on and on and on. They are incapable of managing money. They are incapable of dealing with the United States financial situation. And that has put the United States in a very precarious and tough situation. That has put the United States in a place where, unfortunately, the only solution right now is to raise the debt ceiling to try and get some of this stuff under control. We have buried ourselves in such a financial hole that the only way to get out of it is unfortunately to borrow more money. I don't like that. I think it sucks. I think it's an awful situation that the United States is in. And with this raising of the debt ceiling, Republicans need to be incredibly judicious with how they operate going forward. You want a $4 trillion debt ceiling increase? Okay. You better never touch it. You better find a way to make substantial cuts. And in this bill, we're talking about $2 trillion in spending. So it appears that the framework is there. But this is not going to be a conversation that goes away. We have heard for years now from Republicans in Washington, D.C. about how important it is to deal with the budget, how important it is to deal with spending cuts. Yet every single time we go through this process, whether it's a reconciliation bill or if it's all of the separate budget bills being passed, we see the same thing. No substantial change. No substantial cuts. Nothing actually happening. A bunch of pomp and circumstance. A bunch of individuals saying the right things. But when the rubber meets the road, nobody actually does it. And that has unfortunately plagued the Republican Party pretty substantially for quite some time. And while the reconciliation bill doesn't prescribe specific spending cuts, the resolution directs the Energy and Commerce Committee to slash $880 billion out of their budget, which Democrats have warned would likely mean cuts to Medicaid health services for low-income people. Republicans point to work requirements as a way to reduce costs. If you're not actively trying to work or attempting to go and get a job, you're going to get kicked off of Medicaid. I don't think having a work requirement is such a bombastic idea. You want to collect benefits from the federal government? You need to prove that you're actually seeking employment and not just mooching off the system. The hardline Freedom Caucus took a break from being a thorn in Johnson's side and backed the resolution, largely after the caucus successfully pushed for steeper spending cuts than the leadership originally proposed, around $1 trillion. So finally, a little bit of consensus. Individuals coming together, the Freedom Caucus, who you've got a lot of great members in there, have in fact been a thorn in the Republican side. But in this case, there was negotiations. They came to an agreement, and Freedom Caucus members voted in favor of it. Thomas Massie is not in the Freedom Caucus, and Thomas Massie does whatever the hell he wants in Washington anyway. It's quite bizarre to watch him over the last couple of years. He seems to have, I'm not really sure what's going on with Thomas Massie. I do have an interesting post from him that he put up on X yesterday that we'll read a little bit later on this morning, but I'm not exactly sure what's going on there with Massie. Representative Davidson said earlier on Tuesday that he wanted to see a plan of action on appropriations, given that government funding runs out March 14th. So we're looking at that here in just a couple of weeks. He said having a, quote, whole spending plan would give Trump and the Department of Government Efficiency the ability to fight against court cases. He said, quote, the judge is simply going to say, well, Congress just funded the very thing that you're trying to defund. How in the world are you going to be that tone deaf and not actually lock some of this in? I don't have to get everything, but play a little bit of offense, Davidson said. I agree. Republicans do need to do a better job at playing a little bit of offense. Many rank-and-file members who had reservations about the budget resolution represent battleground districts, and several of those districts encompass communities that heavily depend on Medicaid. After meeting with leaders on Monday and Tuesday, however, a handful of holdouts, such as Representative Nicole Melnikas from New York, were swayed to vote for the resolution. As a way to win them over, leadership continuously pushed the word Medicaid is not written in the resolution and encouraged GOP lawmakers on the fence to understand that all this resolution will do is unlock the process. Majority Leader Steve Scalise from Louisiana said that Trump made calls to multiple members regarding the budget resolution, adding that the president has been, quote, tremendously helpful. Man, must that be an interesting phone call. You're standing on the floor of the House of Representatives. You're a GOP holdout. Your phone rings, and it's Trump. It's Trump calling you to vote in favor of it. I would love to hear those phone calls. I would love to see what the president is saying to those individuals. Is he trying to actually talk through their concerns, or is he just browbeating them into voting in favor of it? I would love to know. Whip Tom Emmer from Minnesota had warned against echoing Democrat hysteria on where savings will come from in a press conference Tuesday afternoon. Other GOP lawmakers insisted that the resolution was a blueprint and nothing more. So, to the question at hand. The debate over possible Medicaid cuts and renewing the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act will be two of the hardest policies to negotiate with the Senate. The upper chamber wants to see a permanent extension of the tax cuts in its two-part budget plan. The first part cleared the Senate last week and would authorize $340 billion for border security and defense, but doesn't address tax cuts or Medicaid. That will be happening in the second part of the Senate resolution. However, the House budget resolution only allocates $4.5 trillion in tax cuts, $200 billion less than what it would take to fully renew Trump's 2017 tax cuts, not to mention his additional demands to eliminate taxes on tips. Representative Mike Lawler, a Republican of New York, said many of us have been very clear. We're not going to cut Medicaid benefits to our constituents, period. But this is a negotiation. The budget resolution is simply about unlocking the ability to negotiate a bill. Everyone wants the process to be finished today. That's not the way this works. This is opening up the negotiations to actually get a bill that will implement the president's priorities. And that's what this comes down to, the president's priorities. If you roll the clock back, or the calendar back more accurately, to 2016, Trump spent his first 2 years in office constantly at ends with his own party. You had Paul Ryan, who was the House Speaker, one of the young cons coming up in Congress at the time, who was adamantly against pretty much anything that Trump wanted to put forward. You had a contingent, and I would argue a pretty substantial contingent, of House Republicans in 2016, and obviously the election was in 2016, Trump sworn in 2017, but in his first 2 years, that were fervently against the president. They, you know, we talk about anti-Trump sentiment now. I mean, these guys hated Donald Trump and actively worked to harpoon anything that he wanted to get done, which caused the first 2 years of the Trump administration to be pretty brutal. Then, of course, the 2018 midterms come along and Republicans get taken to the cleaners, with Republicans gaining control in both the House and the Senate. We are not seeing that anywhere near the level that we did in 2016. Are there some anti-Trump people in Congress? Probably. Are there some in the House? Yeah, there's probably a couple, but nobody dares to murmur that publicly. And the idea now that Trump is just going to be essentially a pushover for these individuals, that's just not happening anymore. Not that Trump pushed over the first time, but he didn't have the bargaining chips. He didn't have the political power to really force these individuals to vote in favor of his agenda, because at the end of the day, it's the president's agenda enacted by Congress. That's not the case this time. Trump has that political power. The American people and the Republican Party as a whole, and I know the left likes to, and some folks on the right try to say, the Republican Party is controlled by Trump. But yeah, it is. I mean, guys, he's the freaking sitting Republican president. I don't know what kind of, you've got these anti-Trumpers on the right that try to own Trump and own the Republicans by saying, Trump doesn't run the GOP. Well, he sure as hell should. He's the freaking president. He's got an R next to his name. If the president is not, and I say running the GOP, he's not actively running the organization. That's what Michael Whatley is doing, who's the head of the RNC. But he's setting the agenda. He's setting the narrative. He's the freaking president. If not him, then who? Some random guy? Some random congressman, the Speaker of the House, that should be the person that is running the Republican Party, setting the agenda for Republicans? If not the president, then who? I don't understand these folks on the right thinking that it's some sort of dig on Trump and dig on Republicans that Trump has taken over the party. He's the duly elected Republican president. Why would you not want him leading the agenda, leading the narrative, and leading his the goal and some of the accomplishments of the Republican Party forward? It doesn't make any sense to me at all. So you've got that unfolding in Washington, D.C. this morning. Mike Johnson is able to muscle at least the muscle portions of Trump's bill through the House. Now back over to the Senate, they got an upper hand on the House, which is not normal when it comes to budget negotiations and things like this. It normally starts in the House. The House deals with it first and then on to the Senate. So we're likely to see some rocky roads in regards to that. And I'll just say this. I get that people have morals, and I think you should have morals. I think you should have principled policies that you stand on. There's no doubt about that at all. But really, at what point can you swallow a little bit of pride and just say, we need to get in line? We need to get some of these things accomplished. I caught a very interesting tweet from Josh Holmes, who is a host over at the Ruthless Podcast, which is a great resource and a great program, as they call it, that takes place a couple times a week. Very much insider political baseball. If you've not listened to the Ruthless Podcast, you absolutely need to check that out. He put this out on his X account last night. There is never a justification to vote against your party's budget resolution with unified control. It's the ultimate shirts v. skins. It has no force of law. It simply allows you to use the budget process to pressure an agenda. Team ball, with us or against us type stuff. And that's it. Looking at some of the comments here on Twitter. Precisely. Amen. I mean, that's it, folks. We have unified control in Washington, D.C. There is never a justification to vote against, again, a budget resolution. This is not the actual budget. This is the budget resolution. I don't care what Thomas Massie thinks he's standing up for. There's never a good justification for that. Now, when it gets into the hard-nosed actual budget negotiations, if there are things that you are adamantly against, I think then if you want to voice your displeasure, I think if you want to try and raise hell in Congress to get your way, I'm okay with that. We have an unbelievable opportunity in front of us right now. We are talking about once in a generation in terms of change to the federal government. It's not going to be fun. It's not going to be easy, and not everybody is going to get everything that they want. That's where Republicans are not going to have to compromise with the Democrats, but Republican fractions are going to have to compromise internally. That doesn't mean throw your morals out the window. That doesn't mean throw your principled conservative stances and flush those down the toilet. That's not what it means. It means that Republicans need to huddle together, work on things like a budget, and work on other pieces of legislation to provide this generational change that our country desperately, desperately needs. You can have the things that you're passionate about. You can have a variety of issues that you are, hell-bent on moving forward or hell-bent on not moving forward. That's fine. But at the end of the day, like Josh Holmes wrote in this tweet, we have unified control. We set the standard. We set the agenda. Republicans need to get in line. That doesn't mean, again, bow down and pass crappy resolutions and awful bills and do things that are not in the best favor of the American people. But if you've got a bill that's 90%+ of what you want and there's 2, 5, 10% that you're not in love with, you got to vote in favor of it. Now, there's the old Reagan quote on dealing with political differences within the same party. And he says something to the extent of, when you've got 80% of things that you agree with somebody on, I'd rather have an 80% friend than a 20% enemy. And that's the way we have to look at this. No, you're not going to get everything that you want. We don't have a monarchy where we elect a king, where a king is sworn into power and the king rules unilaterally on what happens. No, we're an elected government. That means that sometimes you get what you want, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get 80% of what you want. Sometimes you get 50% of what you want. That's just the way it rolls. That's just the way that it goes. So hopefully this is not a precursor or any sort of foreshadowing into what the actual budget is going to look like. If Republicans cannot get unified on a budget, Trump's agenda is done. You can mark my words on that. If Republicans cannot get together on a good budget and allow the Democrats to own the narrative on it, Trump's agenda is done. You can absolutely slam the brakes going 100 miles an hour on this administration. We have unified control. It is time for these individuals to get over it, swallow their pride, and come to the table to work to get Republicans and to not only get Republicans elected in the midterms, but to continue to push the Republican agenda, continue to push the Republican narrative. This cult of personality that exists in the House of Representatives is exhausting. I don't understand what these people are after, and I'm glad people like Matt Gaetz are out because they brought nothing to the equation at all. Thomas Massie, I don't know what the hell he's doing. He has been seemingly against everything that Trump has been in favor of since he's been in office. I don't get it. And again, I've got a very interesting post from Thomas Massie that we'll get into in a couple of minutes. I don't know where he's at right now. It's very, very peculiar. You'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You can leave comments on social media, live, YouTube, Rumble, and X. You can send me a tweet at Nicholas M. Craig throughout the day as well. And we're looking forward we'll be announcing some news during our Patreon chat tomorrow night in regards to interacting with the program. So hopefully you'll join us for that over at patreon.com/Nick Craig, and make sure to give me a follow on X at Nicholas M. Craig. All right, coming up, we've got a couple of interesting things to get into, including some major changes to the press pool that covers the president and Washington, D.C. This tweet from Thomas Massie, as well as a federal worker calling into a very popular radio show to talk about and give her opinions on this, you know, ridiculous request that individuals that are collecting salaries from the federal government actually prove that they're accomplishing something and working. We'll have all that coming up here in just a few minutes. You're listening to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Thanks for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. Don't forget that we will be having our monthly Patreon hangout. That'll be coming up tomorrow night for those Patreon subscribers. You can get in on that, plus get access to daily show notes, bonus content, and more over at patreon.com/Nick Craig, a way to financially support the program. $5, $10 a month if you are so inclined to do so. The support over the last little over a month or so has been phenomenal. So appreciate everybody's financial support and helping provide the show and keep things rolling and operating over here on the program. All right, to some news out of Washington, D.C. this morning. Some major changes coming to the White House press pool. Doesn't sound too crazy, right? Well, here's Caroline Leavitt yesterday talking about these changes and what is coming forward for the media establishment that has owned the White House press briefing room for decades. Take a listen.
As you all know, for decades, a group of D.C.-based journalists, the White House Correspondents Association, has long dictated which journalists get to ask questions of the President of the United States in these most intimate spaces. Not anymore. I am proud to announce that we are going to give the power back to the people who read your papers, who watch your television shows, and who listen to your radio stations. Moving forward, the White House press pool will be determined by the White House press team. Legacy outlets who have participated in the press pool for decades will still be allowed to join, fear not, but we will also be offering the privilege to well-deserving outlets who have never been allowed to share in this awesome responsibility. Just like we added a new media seat in this briefing room, legacy media outlets who have been here for years will still participate in the pool, but new voices are going to be welcomed in as well. As part of these changes, we will continue the rotation amongst the five major television networks to ensure the president's remarks are heard far and wide around this world. We will add additional streaming services, which reach different audiences than traditional cable and broadcast. This is the ever-changing landscape of the media in the United States today. We will continue to rotate a print pooler, who has the great responsibility of quickly transcribing the president's remarks and disseminating them to the rest of the world. And we will add outlets to the print pool rotation who have long been denied the privilege to partake in this experience, but are committed to covering this White House beat. We will continue to rotate a radio pooler and add other radio hosts who have been denied access, especially local radio hosts who serve as the heartbeat of our country. And we will add additional outlets and reporters who are well-suited to cover the news of the day and ask substantive questions of the President of the United States, depending on the news he is making on that given day.
So some major changes coming to the White House. A couple of things, two different things here. The White House Correspondents Association is the group that decides who is in the briefing room. We've already seen changes to that, and we'll continue to see more. And then there's the pool. And so what you've got is when the president, especially when he's traveling, not every single media outlet is traveling with the president. So I get an email almost every morning, or sometimes it's late at night, from the press pool, and it indicates who is responsible for and who is going to be covering the president's activities. And you've got three different avenues. You've got the you've got the TV side of it, you've got the radio side of it, and you've got the print side of it. And for example, here is an email, see if I can pull this up without giving out any pertinent information. Here is an email from the press pool that came out, I got this at 11:51 last night, and this is the email from... I don't know why it's not letting me pull this up. Here we go. This is the daily guidance for the president today. So you've got the wire service being provided by Bloomberg. That's available to all media outlets. Photos from AFP, the New York Times, and Reuters. ABC News is the one doing the television coordination. Newsmax, that's a huge list, a huge name to the thing, is the second TV coordinator and crew. Axios is covering it from print. NPR is doing radio. And new media, The Blaze, will have somebody in the press pool. So because the press pool is a much smaller group, they cycle individuals through, and there's five major TV networks that cover the president. And as you can see here from this new schedule for today, for Wednesday, the in-town press pool, you've got different outlets on here. Axios covering print. The Blaze is going to be covering the pool from the new media standpoint. Newsmax is going to be one of the major TV crews that is in there with the president today in the pool. Why is this such a bad thing? Why is there so much controversy around this? Folks, media is changing. I mean, what you're listening to right now, this show, whether you're watching it live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, or you're listening to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever, this is where media is transitioning. We have seen, over the last 20 years, major changes to media in the country. It started with newspapers. It's now happening to radio, and television will not be far behind. Individuals are getting content on new platforms, whether that be Instagram or TikTok or YouTube, whatever the service or platform might be. Things are changing, and the White House is adapting to those changes and getting things done, getting the message out to the American people. Contrary to what major television networks would want you to believe, people are not watching. The vast majority of people are not watching the nightly newscasts that happen at, 6:30 from all the major networks? They're not watching that. Yes, they still have an inherent audience, but it's nowhere near the mass scale that it used to be. And this White House is hell-bent, and should be, on getting the message out in new avenues and in new platforms, which should be encouraged, which should be praised by the media. But of course, it's not. So the response to this is that, well, the White House is going to just fill the room with a bunch of Trump allies and Trump supporters And that's going to be the only ones doing the narrative and the messaging. Now, you heard from Caroline Leavitt that major media outlets that have been in the press briefing room for years, that would include all the major networks and all the major newspapers that you're familiar with, are going to still continue to have access. So once again, a disingenuous argument from the left, no surprise there. That's not anything shocking or anything new. But I caught this little ditty on Twitter. This is from 2023. The White House purges 442 reporters using new press credentials. Over the past 3 months, this is August 4th, 2023. Over the past 3 months, the number of reporters with access to the White House has dropped by 31%. There are now 442 fewer reporters with a coveted hard pass. That's the result of new rules announced in May that took effect in Tuesday in August of 2023. So the previous administration changed rules to the press and who had access. No concern, no outrage there. But now that the Trump administration wants to do it, all hell breaks loose. The White House is in, it should be in control of the press. I don't think there's much argument about that. I'm sure the mainstream media will claim that, and the White House Correspondents Association will claim so. But I don't see an inherent issue with that at all. The White House wants to change who's got access. I think they've got the purview to do that. So here's the reaction from the White House Correspondents Association. Quote, "This move tears at the independence of a free press in the United States. It suggests the government will choose the journalists who cover the president. In a free country, leaders must not be able to choose their own press corps. For generations, the working journalists elected to lead the White House Correspondents Association board have consistently expanded the WHCA's membership and its pool rotations to facilitate the inclusion of new and emerging outlets." Even though the White House Correspondents Association stripped away 442 press passes 2 years ago, they've expanded their membership? Doesn't seem like it. "Since its founding in 1914, the White House Correspondents Association has sought to ensure that the reporters, photographers, producers, and technicians who actually do the work 365 days of every year decide amongst themselves how these rotations are operated, so as to ensure consistent professional standards and fairness in access on behalf of all readers, viewers, and listeners." They followed up the statement by saying, "To be clear, the White House did not give the WHCA board a heads up or have any discussions about today's announcement, but the White House Correspondents Association will never stop advocating for comprehensive access, full transparency, and the right of the American public to read, listen, and to watch reports from the White House delivered without fear or favor." Eugene Daniels, White House Correspondent Association president, who now works at Politico. Worked at Politico, is now going to host a show over on MSNBC. Eugene Daniels, who wrote this statement, talks about free and fair and transparent press, was announced yesterday he'll be hosting a new show on MSNBC. You think that show is going to be free and fair? You think that show's not going to have a political bias, a political lean at all, hosted on MSNBC? This shock, this pretend shock outrage from the left, it's beyond exhausting. The White House Correspondents Association, the journalists that they have deemed worthy to cover the President of the United States, almost exclusively lean very far to the left. And this idea that somehow there's no longer going to be free access to the president is the biggest load of crap I've ever heard. Donald Trump has spoken more with the media and had spoken more with the media in the first 2 or 3 weeks of being the president of the United States than Joe Biden did in 4 freaking years. But the media establishment, the media elites, who deserve so much credit for the hard work that they do. Oh, they never complained about that. They never complained about not having access to Joe Biden. I never saw any statements from the White House Correspondents Association when Joe Biden was in hiding for weeks or months at a time when he was in the Oval Office. Trump speaks to the press ad-libbed almost every single day. They invite the press pool in. They invite reporters in. And he just ad-libs. They shout and yell questions at him. He responds back. You're going to tell me that there's no free and transparent access to the president? This is the quintessential definition of gaslighting. Because the American public can go on YouTube, can go on X, can go on Facebook or TikTok and see these exchanges with the media every single day. They happen every day when Trump is being asked and answering questions from the media. So as I called it, this fake outrage just doesn't hold any weight. Caroline Levitt said they're not kicking legacy media outlets out. I hope they do. I wish they would, because these outlets don't report on anything. CBS and ABC and NBC, they don't fairly or accurately report what comes out of the White House anyway. So to hell with them. Oh, but Nick, the free press. It's not a free press. These guys are paid and bought and owned by the Democrat Party. These individuals carry the water of one political party and have done so for decades now. They don't freely, fairly, and accurately report what comes out of the White House, what comes out of Washington, D.C. They wrap it in their liberal progressive spin to carry water for the Democrat Party and to demagogue Republicans. So don't pander to me about a free press and free access and transparency. The media doesn't care about that. The White House Correspondents Association should be praising what the White House is doing. They should be praising the president for giving them, the correspondents, the media, the single-handedly, the most access to any administration in American history, bar none. There is not a single administration that interacts with the press more than the Trump White House. You can hate Trump all you want. You are wrong if you think otherwise. It is an absolute fact based on hours and the amount of availability that Trump and his team give more access to the media than any other president has, including him in his first, administration in 2016. Where was the outrage over Joe Biden? Where was the outrage over the lack of transparency from his administration? There wasn't. Because the White House Correspondents Association and the legacy media in Washington, D.C. didn't care. As long as they had their liberal talking points provided by the White House, they were good to go. These people are dishonest. They're disingenuous in what they do. They shouldn't have the access. I wish Caroline Levitt would strip all of their access. There's no reason for them to be in there. They don't report anything accurately anyway. To hell with them. Major change is coming. This is good stuff. Again, we won. We set the agenda. You guys lost. You don't get to decide how things run now. We do. This White House does. Go post on X about it. Go cry. Go on NBC Nightly News tonight and cry about how you no longer have access to the White House, even though you do. NBC is not getting stripped its access to the White House. But still, the fake outrage will exist. And again, this idea that the White House is going to pack the room with its political friendlies. Do you not see the hypocrisy there? When the mainstream media was the sole one providing the access to the Democrat administration under Joe Biden, the entire room was packed with liberal progressive journalists, except for Peter Ducey from Fox News, who was the only one that ever had any back and forth with Jen Psaki, then Karine Jean-Pierre. He was the only one. The rest of the media was a bunch of lemmings, a bunch of pansies pandering to the Democrat Party. No, the Democrats don't see the hypocrisy in that, however. We won, we set the agenda, you guys lost, deal with it. That's as simple as that. I have nothing more to say. I look forward to seeing new media outlets. I'm glad to see that Newsmax and The Blaze are in the media pool. These channels, these outlets reach millions of individuals a day. They should be given the same access to the White House that MSNBC does, who, by the way, has like 140,000 people watching at any time. They don't reach anywhere near the audience as some of these new outlets. Maybe you guys should try being a little less biased in your reporting. Maybe you should try being a little bit more honest with the American people. Actions have consequences. The media has decided that they are not in the business of reporting the news. They are in the business of setting a political agenda to cover for the left. And the consequence of that is now they have to deal with the consequences of no longer being a fair and free press. They have done that themselves. Nobody forced them to get in bed with the Democrat Party. They chose to do that. And now the action of the consequence of that is, yeah, well, some of you are going to lose access to the White House. And we're going to bring in new media outlets that are actually going to report what's going on. Actions have consequences. You have to deal with what you do. It's really as simple as that. So in continuing our discussion on liberal outrage, which seems to be the recurring thread on the program over the last couple of days, workers, federal workers, have to provide and respond as to what they do. They're collecting, in some cases, over $100,000 a year paychecks from the federal government, and now they are being asked to provide what they accomplish. That has, of course, caused all hell to break loose across Washington, D.C. How dare you ask individuals that are collecting taxpayer dollars what they do? There was an interesting caller into The Breakfast Club, which is a syndicated radio show, music show, hosted by Charlamagne, which runs predominantly on R&B stations across the United States. It's very popular. It's one of the most listened to morning shows in the country. This caller is a federal employee and called in. I guess they were talking about this before she called. And they had a very interesting back and forth exchange with this caller. This happened yesterday on The Breakfast Club. Take a listen to this.
Hello.
Hey, good morning. What's your name?
Yes, good morning. I want to stay anonymous, but I do work for the federal government.
All right.
Can you at least tell us where?
Yes, in Florida, Miami, Florida.
No, okay. I mean, like, what branch? Like, what do you do in the government?
Oh, Department of Human Services.
Okay.
Okay. Well, now, what's up? How are you feeling? Did you get one of those emails? Talk to us.
Yes, I got the email, and I honestly feel like this is a great opportunity to outline what you as an employee bring to the bring to the federal government. And if it's really good what you outline, they could give you an opportunity to get a promotion or something. Mm. Like, God forbid.
Whoa, what a novel idea. Maybe this is an opportunity for you to show that you're excelling in your work and maybe get a promotion. Holy crap. What a novel concept. How dare we provide what we're doing when we're collecting our $106,000 a year paycheck? This is blasphemy.
For me, they ask you what you've done. Any other job, they'll ask you at the end of the week, at the end of the month. Because I used to do bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what did we do, you know, at the end of the month? What are the clients that we have to, you know, gear towards to? So at the end of the day, God forbid anybody make any, and it's this Democratic thing. It's like, I don't want to get the parties into it, but they don't want to go to work. They want to work from home. People are not working from home. You know, this.
Let me stop her right there. She says, I don't want to make this a Democrat thing, but Democrats don't want to work. They just want to sit at home and collect a paycheck. Let me roll that back. What she says here should not be understated. This is an employee of the federal government. And they'll ask her coming up here, do you know people that do that? She goes, oh, absolutely. Take a listen.
Oh, geared towards too. So at the end of the day, God forbid anybody make any, and it's this Democratic thing. It's like, I don't want to get the parties into it, but they don't want to go to work. They want to work from home. People are not working from home. You know, this is what you signed up for. If you don't like it, resign. You know what I'm saying? They gave you the opportunity to find another job. I mean, it's not that hard. You're complaining about actually working. I don't get it.
I'm not mad at your perspective. That's why I like talking to people. I like talking to people, and I like talking to people who are in it, because everybody sees things a different way.
I haven't
heard this perspective.
Do you feel like there are a lot of people that are not working, that are taking days off? I guess exactly.
Absolutely.
What
absolutely. I work. I work from home, and do you know what? Donald Trump got the gadget idea because Elon Musk, he fired like 80% of the Twitter people or Tesla people for his company, because you can buy a gadget that actually shakes up, like you're at the desk, but you're really not working. Because computers, it shuts off if it's non-activity within like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it requires you to actually work from home. But it's gadgets around that, and people are actually buying it and using it and not working. And this is our taxpayers' money, and you have to work.
Yeah,
get another job.
You don't like it? Get another job. Amen to every word that just came out of her mouth. She's talking about these gadgets that do what she's talking about. They're called mouse jigglers, and they're very inexpensive. Here's Amazon.com. Search for mouse jiggler. This first one is $18. You put batteries in this thing, you charge it, you put your mouse on top of it, and it will simulate that your mouse is moving. Look at the picture on Amazon. It shows a guy laying on his couch while he's at work and the mouse continues to move. Because if you aren't moving your mouse that's 10, 15 minutes or whatever, you will go on, if you're using Microsoft Teams or some other system, it will show that you're away from your computer. That, of course, is a red flag to your manager who is expecting you to be working. So these things are available for $20 on Amazon. And this is what people are doing. There are reports, and I feel pretty good about reporting that, but there are reports that there are federal employees that are working full-time jobs while they're allegedly working for the federal government from home. They have a completely second 40-plus hour a week job. Because they're just setting up a mouse jiggler or some program on their computer to simulate their mouse movement, and that's all they do. They might jump on a Teams meeting or a phone call every couple of days, but they're just collecting free money from the federal government. And I made the point earlier this week, if this is so big of an issue for you, if this is such a hard task for you to accomplish, like the caller into the radio show said, go find other employment. Go find some other place to work. Now, the only difference is the private sector is actually going to require you to do your job. The private sector is not going to pay you 40 hours a week to run a mouse jiggler on your computer and not have any goals and not have any accomplishments. The federal government allows that, or has allowed that in the past, which is one of the reasons that spending is out of control. Waste, fraud, and abuse, right? That's what we're talking about. It's not only waste, it's fraud. If you're not actually working for the federal government, yet you're collecting a paycheck and you're using some program or using some device to simulate work, you're defrauding the American people. This is not just waste. That is actual legitimate fraud. You're not working. There's never been any accountability, and that's changing. And you're watching all hell break loose over this. It's not a complicated task. Provide your worth. And look at this. Maybe you even get a promotion if you're a federal employee that's actually going above and beyond and, oh, I don't know, doing your job. What a great call. What a great kind of synopsis of the situation. Somebody that's actually doing it knows people that are just buying these $20 mouse jigglers gadgets on Amazon and collecting a paycheck while at the same time they're working another job. What a ridiculous situation. What a ridiculous scenario that we've created. So I'll throw the link to that up on the Patreon show notes, patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, it continues to be very busy in Raleigh. We will be diving into the General Assembly tomorrow morning. There has been a lot that has been going on there, a lot of committee meetings over the last couple of days. We'll have some details on that coming up for you tomorrow morning. And that's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us live weekday morning, 7 o'clock, YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Support the show and get bonus access over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Thanks for joining us. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 7.